Good evening. This is Mark Lynch, and this is Inquiry. My guest tonight is Alexandra Sannikova, who is the director of the Moscow Design Museum and has produced the book Soviet Space Graphics, Cosmic Visions from the USSR. Alexandra, welcome to the show. It's a real pleasure to talk to you about this book.
Thank you for inviting.
Can you tell me a little something about the Moscow Design Museum?
Moscow Design Museum, it's a real, a strange and incredible story, very exciting. We have started a museum in 2012. The idea came to my mind. I was working then in Dutch Embassy at the Cultural Department, but I'm educated as a graphic designer. And I thought, well, all these festivals and events, it's not enough to develop a design scenery in Russia. And I really want to make a design museum or to organize it, to set up. But how to do that? Because there are no oligarchs in the family, and there are no really family money, and it's all like, or investors. And I was thinking with my colleague what we can do, and we decided to make a design museum in a bus.
Whoa. You mean the vehicle, the bus?
Yeah, inside the bus, took out all seats, and make a small exhibition hall
will
be with touch screens, with multimedia equipment.
And it can travel, and it can still travel around? And the bus can still go from place to place?
Yeah, with no windows, to take windows, just to make like a box with multimedia equipment. So I was... The Dutch Embassy was perfect work, wonderful. I was responsible there for design, architecture, and fashion, staying in the office, calling different companies, big companies, and saying, you know, I want to make a design museum in a bus. Would you like to give us a bus, provide us a bus? And then one of the companies replied yes. And so that's how everything started. Then we were preparing multimedia exhibitions and also preparing a big event in Moscow, because we were realizing that the idea that museum, you don't need to go to the museum anymore, museum will come to you.
Right.
So that was the permanent idea. But we, of course, we were realizing that a big show should be in Moscow. So we were preparing an exhibition plan, and then my boss, Steven Kalviner from the Dutch Embassy, he already knew I'm going to open a museum. He said, let me introduce you to Marina Lashak, a lady who was going to be a boss of Central Exhibition Hall of Moscow. And she said, oh, that's a great idea. Why don't you start a museum here? I was like, is it possible? I thought everything, you know, you have to know people and to be present on the museum scene for a long, long time. She said, I like your ideas, I like your team, and let's try. And this was incredible, because this is a manege, Central Exhibition Hall of Moscow City. It's a state place owned by the government.
Wow.
And I've never seen anything like this before. Now I see that miracles can happen. So that's how we started the museum.
Is this book the first book that the Moscow Design Museum has put out?
This one, we have made several books, but the first book was on the Soviet design. And that's the first exhibition we have opened a museum with.
Yeah.
Because we were thinking with colleagues. It also came out with Fighting Press. Now, we thought what would be interesting for public, for general public, and we thought we should do something that we're interested in. And we, being designers, architects, and design historians, we didn't know so much about Soviet design, so we decided to discover ourselves and to tell others what it is about. And it was so incredible, interesting research with our families, because many of our parents and friends of parents and professors and their friends, they're all designers. So it was so easy then to put together a collection, because they were saying, wow, guys, where have you been before? We were just putting our archives on fire in the country house because nobody needed that. And so we started, like, people started to bring us their archives, their prototypes, their works, and we are now, like, collection is growing incredibly. It's already a problem way to keep it.
Wow. Now, this book, the graphics that are in this book of Soviet space graphics, is really, I found it fascinating, because I grew up and I was just a tiny kid, but was when Sputnik launched in 1957, And there was always the space race between the United States and the Soviet Union. And Sputnik really scared everybody in the United States. Those Russians, they're going to get up and own space.
Yeah, it was really, I think, it's like just going to a different reality. But on the other hand, it gave so much inspiration for all designers and illustrators.
Well, that's what this book is about.
Industrial designers.
Yeah, that's what your book celebrates. One of the things that you write in the introduction is that it was long before Sputnik that space had fascinated Russians. How long ago did the interest in space go back in Russia?
Oh, let's go back like a long, long before. Of course, Sputnik, it was already by the Soviets in 1917, right after the revolution. Lenin started to point a discovery of space as one of the major focuses of the Soviet Union and of the communist state. But before this, there was Tsiolkovsky, a famous scientist, but he was writing and publishing also books about the discovering of the space. But nobody was paying attention to that. He was just a teacher in a small city, and he was sending his self-educated, and he was sending his scientist articles and his researches to the academy, and some were positive received, and some were just saying, okay, this was already discovered. And then when after the revolution he presented his works to the Soviet state, they were amazed. They said, yes, that's our hero, that's a person who is going to be a flag in our arms. And so Tsiolkovsky, now we have a museum of a space museum named after Tsiolkovsky. We have his memory, a memorial museum, and he became a real figure and a hero of the space movement. He was a genius.
In 1903, I think it was, he calculated the velocity required to take a spacecraft into orbit around the Earth using liquid oxygen and hydrogen as fuel.
He is genius, and like everyone was making fun of him in the small city where he was working in Kaluga, because he was building all the space shapes himself, the models, and also going with kids and putting on like working on the airplanes, and everyone thought he is crazy.
Now, bringing it up to the Russian Revolution, 1917 to 1923. After the Russian Revolution, or actually from the beginning, the authorities really made an effort to try to make the achievements of science and industry accessible to a general population. Did this mean that there was a lot of magazines and a lot of printed material sort of about technology that was put out to the general public?
That was like that. As we can say that a lot of industrial factories, all the industry and all the properties were expropriated. There were no private property anymore after the revolution. And many people who knew how to manage industry, they moved out of the country, or they were just simply killed. And of course, Soviet wanted to go on with the industry, and they need the industrialization of the country, but and have also super ideas.
Yeah.
But on the other hand, there was no real production of everyday goods. Soviet state was putting all the efforts, economical and also intellectual, into the space, into the military production, and everything that was about everyday life was not well developed, except propaganda and magazines, posters, books, and so on. It was a major instrument of propaganda. That's why they were very well developed, all about printing.
These science magazines for the general public are the source of a lot of the works that are in this book. And I just want to name a couple of them. One of them is in English, is Knowledge is Power. That's one of them, right?
Yeah, this is an amazing magazine. And
can you say the name in Russian?
Znanie Sila.
Thank you. So why would it be so important?
It was giving also a lot of ideas and a lot of information and like feeding brains of people, that there was a lot of, always from the revolution of revolutionary times, there were not enough, life was quite poor and very basic, so people were concentrating on these magazines, on reading, and education was very good in the Soviet Union. So these popular science magazines, they were, everyone was subscribed. Or if you didn't have money in the family to do that, so you can go to the library, and libraries were very well attended, and you can read all these magazines, because every library had the whole set of them. It was a way to escape, I think, also from reality, going into the science and science fiction, and into the dreaming, how the better world will be organized. And in these magazines, there are very good artists, the best artists, I can say, were working to illustrate articles, as well as a very prominent scientists who are writing to this, were working, collaborating with these magazines. So this was a really science's power, knowledge is power. It really reflects what it was about, this magazine, that title.
Now there's another one, Technology for the Youth. Can you say the Russian name for that?
Znanie Sila.
First of all, if I could just stop you, if I ever start a rock band, I want to call it Technology for the Youth.
Yeah, that really sounds cool.
Doesn't it sound great? That'd be the great name for a rock band, Technology for the Youth. These magazines, and looking at the illustrations that are in the book, they remind me, we have two magazines here that have go back that far, Popular Science and Popular Mechanics. And these two, the magazines that you talk about in this catalog, really remind me of that, in that not only do you look at futuristic things, but the magazines celebrate technology developments of the day. So, for instance, there was a huge a television tower in Ostankino and in Moscow. And talk about that, because that was one of the things. It was a huge technological development, and that was celebrated in these magazines.
All developments were celebrated in this magazine. You just can see the development of the world, because they also had an overview of what was going on in the world, in other countries except Soviet Union. And everything what was going on, you just can look the history through this magazine, what was developed at a certain amount of time, a certain age. And what's incredible about this magazine, it has a very particular covers and illustrations inside. They're very futuristic, and they're up, and they're up to the world trends, because I see a lot of likeness and between what was done, for example, for NASA, and what was made to illustrate Soviet developments. I can see that this like trends in visualization, they are very common.
Yeah, I think
even though we are living in different countries, and we were living in very different countries.
Right, exactly right. In the 50s and in the 60s here in America, there was a real fascination by the general public, for instance, of, you know, what it would look like if we traveled to the moon in the 50s before we even launched anything. And there was a lot. Yeah. We had an artist like Willie Lee is one of them. And there was huge. It was very, very popular. And that's why I find these illustrations so beautiful. But the interesting thing is I find the art styles very uniquely Russian, very uniquely Soviet. There's something distinctly Soviet about the art style in this.
I think that's also about typefaces.
Typefaces are very big.
Acrylic.
Yep, yep.
Yeah, and that's also give you a special feeling. But I think that's also some, like Russians, we have, of course, a long tradition of illustration and graphic design, like from avant-garde times.
Well, from the revolution, too, from the constructivists in the Russian Revolution,
These experimental designs and avant-garde and constructivism as a part of avant-garde, they were very specific, and it was inspiration for the whole world.
Yep.
And of course, many, like in the 60s, it was a Khrushchev throw, and many artists, they came back and they started to be inspired again by the avant-garde movement, because before that, during the Stalin time, this the whole story was forgotten, and it was like not it was almost prohibited, because at some point these bright ideas and this very revolutionary style, it was needed by the power anymore. So only in the 60s it was appreciated back, and especially in the magazines where designers had more freedom to express themselves than in posters or outside designs for demonstrations or state celebrating state holidays. They could really express themselves in the illustrations.
You're listening to WICN 90.5 FM. This is Inquiry. My name is Mark Lynch. My guest tonight is Alexandra Sannikova. She is the director of the Moscow Design Museum, and they have produced an amazing book. It's just beautiful and fascinating at the same time. Soviet Space Graphics, Cosmic Visions from the USSR. Alexander, I was also interested to read what science fiction people were reading in Russia at the time. And obviously there are people like Arthur C. Clarke that was mentioned, who's British. Stanislaw Lem, who's Polish, who I'm very familiar with. But there were other ones like the Strugatsky brothers, on Arkady and Boris. Talk to me about who they are. I never heard of them.
Oh, it's now absolutely it's possible to find all these books translated into the English. And what was nice about these magazines, they were presenting books and texts from the foreign authors translated into the Russian. And this is incredible, because like being behind the Iron Curtain, there wasn't information what was going outside. And Soviets, they had a possibility to read the latest books by science fiction authors. Also, this was an inspiration for the artist a lot, because all these visions of the future, how people are going to live, like in the circle around an Earth, because
yeah.
They were many writers and also many scientists were thinking to bring production and to bring all like factories and also offices outside of the Earth, and to place them in different attached in between themselves studios, and it will be like a total circle around the world, and then it will be all connected, and it will be easy also to move inside and to like to set up the energy there, and to have like low costs of keeping it, to make it an international, of course, station.
Let me talk to you.
And many ideas like that.
Yeah, let me talk to you about researching for this exhibition. How did this all? Obviously, most of the illustrations were created before you were born. How did you go about researching what you wanted to put in this book and the exhibition?
It was so hard.
I can imagine.
Material is incredible, and it's huge. Like some magazines, they are published for more than 100 years, and we just looked through all the covers for every year, and were choosing together with the publishing house, Fiden Press.
Yeah.
We were looking with the editors and the managers what will be the best. As of course, book is have certain amount of pages. You just cannot put in it everything. So we were looking what is the most touching and visually attracting. When I was looking through, because we don't have in the collection all magazines for all the periods, but many we have. It was they were donated to the museum by designers, by friends of the museum, and also many of those that my father had them in the country house when I was small.
Oh wow!
I was just looking at these magazines. Yeah, and we have several boxes, so that was the start of the collection of the magazines. Yeah, and he gave it to the museum, of course, as a present. And then while choosing information for the book and covers, I was going through all these magazines, and I was just, it took me much more time than I was expecting, because I was reading all the articles. I thought I would just look through the covers and we'll choose the most interesting ones, and then I was getting into these stories.
You were getting distracted is what you were doing.
Absolutely, yes. And it was like, instead of 3 months, it took me 5 months, because it came down that I want just to know what this scientist was thinking, or because it's interesting what illustrators are illustrating, because you cannot just show visual content without getting into what it was about.
Well, what was interesting reading about the illustrators in this book is that several of them were actually scientists or engineers. For instance, Jurgi Pokrovsky, one of Technology for the Youth's first illustrators, had a PhD in engineering. So they were bringing technical scientific knowledge to their artwork.
Yeah, otherwise they just cannot make the truly image, and people would be like doubting, because many of people who were subscribed to the magazines, they were engineers themselves or designers, and they would say, oh, this is like impossible. But then when it's a real spaceman cosmonaut who is making those illustrations, or a real engineer, then they will be doing, of course, like a futuristic project, but they will be very careful with details, thinking how it could look like, and not just a pure fantasy.
It was amazing. Once the space race, once Sputnik launched and you sent the dogs up, the dogs, I've actually done, I know. But I actually covered them.
You know, they are stuffed. They are stuffed in the space museum here. This Belka and Strelka, the famous
two dogs.
To the Earth. I was in the space museum in Moscow, and I entered, and I was like, "Oh, I've seen them. They're like Lenin Mausoleum."
Oh yeah.
They are stuffed animals. This Belka and Strelka in the museum. They are there.
There was actually there was a British punk band named after Laika. What's the dog's name? Is it Laika or?
Laika as well. They were
There was a British punk band named after them, and they used all Soviet graphics on their stuff. Once the space race got going, and Yuri Gagarin took up the first cosmonaut, April 1961, the first spacewalk in 1965, and the Voskhod, Alexei Leonov. How did all that excitement about space and Russia affect other things like architecture, like graphics, and just day-to-day stuff? I mean, was there a sense that the Russia in space was a central theme for the country then?
Yeah. It was a total excitement, and from the times when from the first Sputnik, when the Sputnik was launched, and then Gagarin went into the space, everything turned all designers and architects and creative people, they were so excited and they were inspired. We had so many things that were inspired by space, textiles, everyday goods like samovar. Some of our Sputnik, we have it in our collection. And now actually it's shown many of those things in Zimmerli Museum, which is near New York. We have an exhibition there on nonconformism and Soviet design, like underground art. And we show these parallels how space and how also space race was influencing everyday goods. Some of our Sputnik, I think it's such a Russian thing to put these things together. This is something that also produced at the military factory when they were making parts for the airplanes, because all designers, they had to make some everyday goods. It was a state order, because most of the factories were working for the military purposes after the Second World War, and then government decided that they should all have some percentage of everyday goods. Then designers who were making military stuff, they focused and were inspired by space and started to make all these interesting things, like stools with three legs, like Sputnik, or there were a lot of textiles with planets. There were.
There was even a song. There was a song, and you're going to have to forgive my Russian, which is zero. Rodina Slishet, Rodina Zenayet. The motherland hears, the motherland knows.
Yeah.
And wasn't that recorded by one of the cosmonauts?
Well, I don't know about that. I think so. It could be easily because cosmonauts, they were also like Leonov. Yep. He was an artist, and he was producing books and magazines, covers and postcard sets, and making exhibitions. So cosmonauts, they started to be legends. And like Gagarin, we have a statue here, which is it's an incredibly huge monument in Gagarin Square. We have actually memorials in many also fresques and mosaics on the building facade.
Wow!
And regarding that, if you are looking in every normal, not Moscow, like average Russian city, till now you can find playgrounds that are like cosmodromes, where you have rockets.
Wow!
And you have all like planets and circles around the planets with other planets. It's just it stays there from Soviet times. And how many toys were made?
I did an interview about the space dogs, and there were so many things that were made for the public use with the space dog imagery on it. There were ashtrays, there were toys, there was everything.
Packaging, especially,
Alexander, we're completely out of time, and I could be talking to you for hours about this book. I love this book, and especially I love the futuristic things with all the weird biotechnical stuff. My guest tonight is writer Alexandra Sannikova, who is also the director of the fabulous Moscow Design Museum. And we're talking about the book. I strongly recommend it. Soviet Space Graphics, Cosmic Visions from the USSR. Alexander, it's been a real pleasure to talk to you. I hope to talk to you again about another exhibition.
Oh, thank you so much.
You're listening to WICN 90.5 FM. This is Inquiry. My name's Mark Lynch. Good night.